Let's get to James Abate, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer at Center Asset Management. So we mentioned there the JOLTS survey was pretty frisky, James, but the prices paid component in the ISM was way down. So I guess the main takeaway is the same. It's a solid economy, and a question could be then, is there enough momentum in inflation coming down to cheer the bulls, or is it time for the bears to continue to reign supreme?
You know, it's a little too early to tell. I mean, as you point out, you know, the ISM index, which is to the stock market as important as the Department of Labor's monthly payroll number is to the bond market. It's literally the most important top-down indicator. So the manufacturing index came in at 50.02, which means we're literally teetering on recession, but the directional momentum is still down. And, you know, from that perspective, I think, you know, we have to wait and see. But as you said, the saving grace in that was that the inflation index was below 50, giving some indication, but that tends to be more geared towards producer prices rather than consumer prices. And unfortunately, what we've seen lately is a sharp increase in services inflation, and I think a lot of that has to do with the significant decline in productivity that we've witnessed.
James, though, ultimately, we're not getting huge wage increases. You know, that is a fact from the data that we've been looking at. And that would also then mean that perhaps what inflation is doing at the moment is perhaps, I'm going to use this word, transitory. It's not as actually deeply as embedded, and it has not as much momentum as people are looking at with the policy response that we have.
Oh, well, with the fact that productivity falling so rapidly, let's not forget that the latest reading was minus 4%. That's the lowest number we've seen in 70 years. So from that perspective, when you think about what the Fed has to do, you know, there's never been an environment, really, when the Fed has raised interest rates, we've brought on a recession where productivity didn't go up. Companies have taken the steps to right-size their operations. You know, we're in a very sticky place here, and I think actually stagflation is the more likely outcome here.
The bears have had the wind in their sails this year and probably feeling pretty smug. But since June, the S&P 500 is actually a little bit higher. So I suppose the question is, what does this transition to next?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, right? So bear markets have three stages. There's usually that sharp down effect, which was the derating that we experienced in the first half of the year. You get a reflexive rebound, which we enjoyed over the summer months. But then if you have a bear market, you have a drawn-out fundamental downturn.
Yeah, so it seems like we'll have to continue in a moment, James, almost treading water at the moment. James Abate from Center Asset Management, up against the clock.
James, you know, we've been talking about the data, that JOLTS data. We're talking about some of the other, facets affecting what's going on in the economy. But tell me something. How do you see things panning out? Because we left on a note where you used the S word, stagflation.
Yeah, the reason why I use stagflation is that I think one of the things that is a problem right now with most analysts is that they suffer from recency bias, meaning that they're still looking at the 2008 2009 global real estate and financial crisis rather than the dot-com bust as a good analog. I think what people have to remember is that the important distinguishing characteristic of that 08-09 period that's overlooked by most in the financial and analysts and media world is that the misallocation of capital back then leading to that crisis was not confined just to real estate and excessive balance sheet leverage at the financial sector, but also included the energy and resources industries that underwent, you know, an excessive period of investment to feed the growing industrialization of China in the mid-2000s. You know, right now we have a misalignment of capital spending cycle with the stock market or consumer business cycle, meaning that My fear is that the wholesale destruction that we may see from the wealth effect this cycle will be as intense as it was during the dot-com bust, but the inflationary declines that emanated from the excessive tangible capacity that came online preceding the 2008-2009 recession in the energy and resources industries is not evident today, so it's not going to provide the disinflationary benefit to interest rates.
Yeah. So, I mean, it feeds into what is the biggest unintended consequence from this most recent dislocation?
You know, from this dis- relocation is that we stay in an environment where pricing becomes the dominant variable, you know, in the marketplace. And almost we go back to a period of time where, in the worst case scenario, if you think about the price to earnings multiple being kind of a inverse relationship of, you know, interest rates and risk, you have an environment where interest rates stay high and continue to basically reflect that higher inflation, but also you get people's risk appetites declining. So you get a compounding effect, which means the PE multiple continues to fall in the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so you're looking more at, I suppose, at the end of the day, the E, if earnings fall. But, you know, what did you make of the earnings season thus far then?
You know, that's exactly the point. And our thesis going into the year was that basically you can have a broad derating in stocks. So what you wanted to do was find companies that could generate high earnings growth. And that's why you've seen energy, you know, the EPS growth rate in energy, I think, was like 80 or some odd percent. But that had offset a 10% decline in the PE multiple, even for the energy sector. So when you look at the S&P 500 as a whole, you know, if you look at the total return year to date, you know, about 22% of it is a decline in the PE multiple, with just about 4% of it being positive EPS growth. But most of that came from, you know, energy, staples, and utilities. Nowhere else, really.
So the problem for the average investor is that even if they thought, well, okay, if that's the case, then I can go to the bond market and have a mix of corporates and sovereigns. But you're saying that inflation will stay high, so that's going to erode those yields.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, people, again, with the recency bias, this inverse correlation that exists between stocks and bonds has only been in evidence since 2002. You know, prior to that, and for the majority of the past 100 years, stocks and bonds moved together based upon inflation. So I think when you look at the perspective of where we are today, you know, the problem is people look at price momentum and trend following as the be-all and end-all. But when you look at long-term perspectives of history, you know, the big money is usually made when you can anticipate regime changes, and we're in the midst of that regime change that started this past year.
So what do you do then? I mean, that's the final question. It's the big one.
Well, let's just look at the stock market, right? Everybody's talking about how great the Dow had a month in October, right? It was the best month since 1976. You know, the problem is if you look at 1977, it was a terrible year for the markets, and the S&P fell, you know, 7 out of the first 10 months of the year, ended with a loss. You know, that said, small caps did very well. So I think don't underestimate the ability of stock picking, sector rotation, and other things, but basically try to limit your market risk.
Yeah, at least a positive finish up there. Thanks.
James, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. James Abate there, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer at Center Asset Management.